C2PR. Number 19B.
So, this is the subject of life here, and which is very necessary to see through. Because humanly, we see somewhere a healing. And then we say, oh, that healing, without going to a doctor, is a spiritual healing. And it may not be a spiritual healing at all. So you can have effects that are similar, but the cause different. Because absolutely, just as you have wet streets, and the cause may be different. So there is no reasoning from effect to cause. In the human, we do that. We always have an effect, and then we ask for the cause. Don't you do that? You see, something happens, and then you say, why did it happen? What is the cause? And you reason back from effect to cause. Every time you get sick, and you say, what is the cause? Being a Christian scientist, you know, well, the cause must be a mental cause or something like that. And it shows that this is not scientific. That we should never reason from effect back to cause, as we usually do. And only when we come to science, it says, you have to go out in prayer from the only source and cause there is, and that's life. And that life brings about an effect, but that effect is always your cause. It brings you right back to your cause. There is nothing outside. It's always inside. So, we should really get aware of it, because, you know, people come to students and so say, you know, I have read a wonderful book. You know, it's all about spiritual healing. They do the same as you do. They also heal spiritually. And they have wonderful healings. And they have. They have. The medical people have. Nobody can tell me that the medical people don't have wonderful healings. They really have. But then they say, because it is spiritual healing, it's the same as you. Without asking, what is the cause? Did they go out from the same cause as we go out? Or did they go out from another cause? The effect may be the same. The effect may be the same. The streets are wet. So that tone of life begins to tell us that we always should go out from the source of life and let that source of life bring about and effect what that source wants to bring out. And never to judge it from the effect. Never judge the effect if that effect is right or not. Always judge it from the cause, if the cause is right or not. If the cause is right, the effect is right. No matter if we see it or don't see it. No matter if we agree with it or don't agree with it. And we have to learn in prayer that we really can rely on that law that it says, if I go out from the source, then always the effect is right. Then no treatment is in vain. No matter if outwardly we can see it or can't see it. No matter if outwardly the effect is on a patient or on the world or unknown to us. It's always, every treatment that goes out from the source is always a right treatment. It's always a positive treatment. It's always an answer treatment. We can have not a cause without an effect. Therefore, this prayer is investigating, so to say, the depths of our cause. Do we go to the depths of being, and do we pray with the depths of being from the cause? And actually, what is the cause? The cause is the first prayer. That's where everything starts. When we go to the first prayer of mind and build up in our desire and in our seeking that terrific sense that there is only the all mind and the all spirit and the all soul and the all principle and the all life and the all truth and the all love, we know that if that prayer is now in the fifth prayer, a deep felt prayer, a habitual prayer, an unceasing prayer, you get to it the tone of life, you know, that is a deep prayer, and you know that that prayer has an effect, which is right. So, in this whole prayer, she will speak about the depth of prayer like this, about the deep thought, the ardent desire. It's not just desire, it's ardent desire. It's the fervency of prayer. See, it's fervent. Can you see? It gives a sense of depth to it. With eagerness of purpose, keenly, to be keenly desirous, yearning, longing, craving, intensively striving. It has all that terrific intensity of prayer. Like life is so intense in its manifestation. Compared then naturally with the superficial sense of prayer. Here the superficial sense of prayer is explained as public prayers, audible prayers, petitions, public expressions, torrents of words. See, instead of the fullness of desire, you have torrents, that's also fullness, but of words only. All right. Now, let's go to the first tone of life as mind. So we read after that first sentence, which gives, so to say, the keynote for the fifth prayer, on line 22. We know, and again, you start right out again with mind, it starts out with knowing. We know that the desire for holiness is requisite in order to gain holiness. So she depicts that law of cause and effect. Says if you want to attain holiness, then you must first have that holiness within the source of it, in your prayer. Your desire must be for holiness, so that everything within you yearns for holiness. And only then can we gain holiness. We can never gain anything which is not in the source. Usually, a religious church prayer says, I have nothing, but with prayer I want to gain something. Whereas a scientific prayer says, that which I want to gain, I must have first. I must first have the answer before I ask. You take the end for the beginning. So in order to gain holiness, we just must have within ourselves the desire for holiness. Because only like produces like. Therefore, it's no use to have within ourselves a sense of emptiness, of disappointment, of fruitlessness, what is the barrenness, of frustration, all that, and then say with that kind of barrenness and emptiness I go to God, and I know God is fullness, God is holiness, so somehow he will give it to me if I approach him that way. Well, we never get it. Isn't it interesting that in scientific prayer we take the answer for the beginning. We take the effect and say that effect must first be in the cause. We are not going to reason from the effect to the cause, but say that effect which we want to have must be the cause. So we will see as we go on But she says, well, within ourselves must be the desire for holiness, or we need never get holiness. You see, holiness is a religious term, and she uses it in prayer. But actually, we are not just interested in holiness, for instance. We are perhaps interested in the science of being. That we would like to gain the science of being, an understanding of the science of being. In prayer, we do not go out and say, I would like and pray that I get the science of being. You go out from the science of being. And you say, well, I don't know. I say, yes, you know. Because even the little grain that we have is enough. That can grow. But to go out from ignorance and to expect then understanding is not on the same level, is not on that circuit of the same nature. Therefore, if we pray for holiness, all right, we must have a desire for holiness. If I pray for the development of the idea of science and I have that desire for the science, then I go out from the science. How do I go out from the science? I go out from that what I know. I go out to see that there is, whatever I know at the present moment, that there is one principle, that that principle has categories, and I adore those categories. With all my heart I see this is the Christ to our day, this is the solution for our day. I see that science has categories, that those categories are working in a system. I see the beauty of that system. See, I build up within myself that what I know about the science of being. And the more I do that, and as we said, put that into the incubator, if we ponder that and let that operate and let that be developing, the more then the outcome will be that another aspect of the science will show itself. If in our prayer we go out and say, this science is difficult, this is really difficult, I really don't know much about it, I wonder if I ever will get it, that's not the prayer. See, that's not humility. Say, well, I'm humble enough and admit that I don't know. So that's no humility either. It's just plain ignorance. And so we must make use of what we have. Like we saw in the spirit, that if we are grateful for all what we have already received, makes us fit to receive more. There we had it already, at spirit to spirit. So we have to apply that to every situation. Not only to be grateful for something we have received, like a nice job or a nice healing, but for everything. And I usually have applied it over the last 50 years always to the science of being. Because I was always more or less healthy. I never had to stay in bed. I never had to go to a doctor. I don't know why. Perhaps I'm naturally that good constitution I have physically. I don't think that I have been treating myself, especially for health. I had it, but I was never interested in it. I was never interested in it. I was always interested in the science, in reality. What is reality? What constitutes reality? Therefore, naturally, I have somehow centered and focused my prayer on what is the science of being. And because I focused that, I naturally nurtured it, I put it into the incubator of science, and little by little that incubator will bring forth something. Take the biggest and not the smallest. The biggest is the science of being, the smallest is your corns. So if we heal the corns, we don't save the world. But if we take the signs of being, we can do something with that, because that applies to the world. Yes. All right. So, again, start all over again on line 22. We know that the desire for holiness is requisite in order to gain holiness. But, I always say this, but, these are the most wonderful words in the textbook, the but. They always say, be careful, there is something else to it. But if we desire holiness above all else, we put that above all else, we shall sacrifice everything for it. Yes? So you see, it's not enough to desire holiness. That's mind. Spirit says, but you have to put that above everything. You put first things first and second things second, the second day. So you put some spirit into that prayer. Not only the desire. Above all else. And third, we shall sacrifice everything for it. We really have that sacrifice of soul, which says you get rid of yourself and then you are impersonal. We will be willing, we must be willing to do this. And we have principle. You see, she builds up again her source. Her source. She says, how do I gain holiness? I gain holiness by first building up within me the desire for holiness. How do you build up the desire for holiness? You must have first a true desire, second put everything into its spirit and sacrifice everything for its soul and then do it. Principle. And to do this, that we may walk securely, the way of life, securely in the only practical road to holiness, your life, the way of life. Doesn't that knock you over? A short sentence which we have taken and said, well, that's really nicely written. That's a good sentence. But if we translate it into the system, we suddenly begin to realize that she gives us the method of how cause brings forth a right effect. We must first have that holiness within ourselves as a desire, then put everything into that, make it first place, put it above all else, be willing to sacrifice something for it, to give up self and sense for it, then do it, not just always desire it, and do it. Then she says, then you have the only practical method, the only practical road to holiness. Yeah? These things, I don't know how they affect you. They always affect me very much. And I said, golly, for the first time in history, there is somebody who has come and given a textbook who always showed how to arrive at something, who didn't say you should arrive at something. You should get there. And you better pull up your socks and get there. But said, I give you the ordered steps so that you know what to do. So that you know if you don't fulfill those steps, you shouldn't be surprised that you don't get there. See? So for everyone, as I said, instead of holiness, we can take divine signs or the signs of being, which would say, well, first of all, do you have a desire to attain that? Is that true desire? Second, it says, do you put everything into it? Or is it just a little hobby? Is it just a sideline for you? Or do you put first things first? Do you have always time first for something else And if there is a little time left over where you don't know what to do, you can take the textbook and read it. Or is it otherwise? It's a very serious thing, this business of learning science. It's a serious thing. It constantly makes us face with facts. Here is the fact. Do we put that above everything? Then you say, yes, I will. I actually will. Can you realize what my university students thought about me? When I stepped out of the university with one of the best theses and then said goodbye, I studied now science, Christian science, in the 30s. Max. Yeah. It's different today. When I meet them, I only meet now about 50%. The others I can no more meet. They are under the earth. And the rest of the 50 are all sick and struggle with their doctors and their psychiatrists. I'm the only one that is happy. So you can see what she said. You only have to wait to the end and see what happens.
This isn't
your
end.
Yeah, yes, not quite to the end. Yeah, well, then comes that point, huh, to sacrifice something for it, and afterwards to do it, and then she says, now you got the method. So mind, spirit, soul, principle now is the method. That's the only practical road to holiness. But she even goes a bit further and says prayer cannot change the unalterable truth. She goes a step further to truth, even to the sixth. Nor can prayer alone give us an understanding of truth. That's interesting. He says that prayer alone cannot give us an understanding of truth. Apparently there is something more than prayer. And naturally there is. There are another 15 chapters. So, but still, she says, you know, I have shown you the method up to the point of life, and with that method you are well equipped. But you have not yet got your understanding. But it will lead you to that understanding. So she says, but prayer coupled with a fervent, habitual life, constantly, desire to know and do the will of God, up to the method goes up to principle and do the will of God, will bring us into all truth. Can you see that she looks into the future and says, prayer alone doesn't give you an understanding of truth, but it brings you to truth. So that we can see prayer is only the first big step in the textbook. It will bring you into all truth. Such a desire has little need of audible expression. It is best expressed in thought and in life. Very often, you see, she would do that she would, so to say, bracket in or embrace a subject by just telling the first and the last of the order, by expressed in thought, first prayer, in desire, and in life, the fifth prayer, but meaning that within that is really what she has explained before, the whole method of life. Yes. Isn't it a beautiful paragraph? So full. It really, really, you know, people always say, students in the movements always say, if I only would know what steps I have to take, what to do in order to grow in understanding. And they don't see that. They read it constantly every day, what it would be, but they can't recognize it. They cannot recognize it because they don't have the system. You see, they read words instead of tonalities. And the tones they cannot classify. They cannot classify. Do you see, did I make that clear? Huh? Only when we have the same text, but because we can classify all those terms here, words here, those few hundred important words, because we can classify them into categories and say, oh, why, this is mind, oh, why, this is spirit, oh, why, this is soul, we get order. We get order. The others can't get order. If we have 20,000 words, now you don't get an order. We only get order when we can reduce those 20,000 words into, say, 7 categories. Then we get an order that we can overview and which we can understand. But the order of 20,000 words we cannot understand. That is above us. But that is the method.